So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns, and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting, because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters, instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand, if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this hunter initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're gonna do a little storytelling session, a little campfire session with Greg McHale of well, he's got a TV show and he's an adventure racer. This guy's like serious backcountry, drop-in airplane hunts, parachuting type crap. Shit that I don't get involved in. But how's it going, Greg?
Yeah, it's going good. That's an interesting introduction. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Shit that I don't get involved in. I like
like my
that. Yeah,
life.
I like that. No, thanks, John. Yeah, it's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I mean, you kind of introduced it in an interesting way, and I guess people are going to go, well, who is this guy? And I guess yeah, he's just a guy from the Yukon. That's really who he is. And our show, and we've been on the air on the Sportsman Channel. This year was our first season, and it's been an interesting year. We've done a lot of, we've done produced two seasons now, but one is on the air. So yeah, that's kind of it's been a great year. It's been a great journey. It's I brought the kind of this adventure racing style of hunting that I do to I guess to the public, and not that it hasn't been going on out there by other people, but I think that but yeah, it's just I think we're enjoying what we're doing, and hopefully that people are as well.
Nice. Yeah, I caught a couple episodes. I just checked out your sizzle reel. Is that's for next season, or is that was this past season?
Yeah, that's for next season.
Okay, yeah,
Yeah.
that's what I thought so.
You got the sneak peek.
I mean, I'm telling you, the cinematography is amazing. You guys did an excellent job. The adventures look, I mean, sick. I'd love to do some of that stuff. I just, ever since I had a wife and kids, I've really backed away from getting too crazy. I feel like if I hurt myself or, God forbid, don't come back, I'm leaving too much out there. So, I mean,
Yeah,
don't
I
get me
don't.
wrong. I like adventure, but
I think if my wife
I don't know
heard
about
you
jumping out
talking
of
right now, I
planes.
might not be going hunting anymore either. No, I mean this. John, it's really been. I've been asked. I get some social media stuff, and hearing the rumors, and it's kind of like, where is this guy? Where does he come from? Like what? How does he show up on the scene, and then this is kind of what these guys are producing. Really, where I, and it's not just me, it's the team. It's we have a team that is just, I believe, is just second level. And what we're trying to do is just kind of do what we do. And I've been, this is a 20-year process. You don't just go and want to start a TV show and be able to, fly your own airplanes and be, and, adventure race and do these kind of things. It's just been a culmination of 20 years of hard ass work to get to where we are right now. And we are by no means perfect. And we're by
Oh,
no means the best out there. We're, we are just grinding it out every day and trying to produce the best content that we can produce. And it absolutely, sure, the show is Greg McHale's Wild Yukon, but it's important for me that people know that it's not Greg McHale. It's a
right.
team effort. It's Dave, it's Carl, it's our families, it's our partners. Like these are, and it's been a lot of years and a lot of hard miles to get to where we are right now. And yeah, there's no stop button. So that's kind of
Yeah.
the attitude. And I
So
hope that it comes
tell me a
across
little bit
that
about
way.
the adventure racing first before we jump into the hunting stuff.
Yeah,
What is that
so
exactly? I mean, I got an idea, but I feel like there's different
yeah, I come from,
avenues
so
and different
my
areas.
background is heavy in endurance athletics. Like I started out, I've had a career of kind of big wall climbing and mountaineering, and that kind of molded into this adventure racing because I was always looking for the next adventure or something more. And adventure racing was intriguing. And that sport is, I would argue with anybody that that is the most difficult human endurance team sport on the planet. It's the kind of racing that we really were, successful at was more the expedition, what they call expedition style, this kind of 4 to 6, 8 day races nonstop, around the world. And, basically the sport consists of mountain biking, running, trekking, and paddling. Those are the three main disciplines. And sure, there's some, different countries and different races have some different aspects of, some ropes, that kind of stuff. But those are the three main disciplines. And basically in that sport, you start the race and they give you maps and you navigate map and compass, no GPS, old school map and compass, cross country through places that, literally people have not walked. And on, because there are those places on the planet, there's, and we're in, find ourselves in countries where you, there would be no good reason to ever walk through there. other than if you were racing, right? Or paddling or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a fantastic sport. That sport can teach you things about yourself that you had no idea. And it's raw. When you're down 4 or 5 days into a race and you've had, 4 hours of sleep, 5, 6 hours of sleep over that 4 or 5 days, yeah, you really figure out who you are real quick. And your teammates figure out who you are real quick too. So it's an amazing sport, and yeah, it's provided a lot of great things in my life, and unfortunately, I was able to do a lot of racing with great people and good friends and my wife, and yeah, so I hope that kind of answers the question.
And whatever you just did right now, you got a little bit louder. That was perfect. I don't know what that
Okay.
was. Maybe just the angle of your where your mouth is. But yeah, because you were just a little bit low.
Okay.
Yeah, so that kind of evolved, and now you have I mean it's pretty apparent, like that kind of that style of racing has all the components that you need to do these adventure hunts. So it's kind of, it makes sense that you transitioned into that and had that go hand in hand. I mean, all those sheep hunts, goat hunts, all that stuff. I mean, that's an adventure race in itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, the one thing of, through the athletic career that I've had, the one thing that has stayed consistent is always been the hunting. I big wall climbed for a while, I mountaineered for a while, and obviously I grew up playing hockey as a kid and all of these things. But the one thing that stayed consistent throughout my whole, life from a young kid is hunting. It's and when sheep season was on, there better not be the world championships of adventure racing better not happen in August 1st, or there's or it's a big problem in my house. So
I'm jealous how my I'm jealous how often you get to go sheep hunting. I need to move to BC. I need to move to the Yukon.
Well, it's you gotta be ready for some weather then, because right now I was out running this morning and for an hour and a half and it's like -30, and then
Oh,
I hit the top of the
Jesus.
mountain and it was -35. So yeah, great sheep hunting, but there's a lot of season that you can't hunt sheep, and it's a
That's why I
demanding
keep a house
place.
down here in Arizona.
There you go. That's the smart answer
Going to
right
be like
there.
60 degrees today.
Oh man, that's funny. No.
Low of 38 and a high of 60.
Oh,
Yeah. So,
that's a
no.
summer. That's a summer day in the Yukon.
I still have yet to make it to the Yukon or Alaska. I've hunted a little bit in British Columbia for moose and some mule deer hunting.
But I've never made it up to Yukon, never haven't had a chance to go up to Alaska yet. I'm trying to plan Sitka blacktail in Alaska, and then
Nice.
maybe possibly in the next 2 years, I might try to go get a Yukon moose. I'm not sure
Nice.
yet. I mean,
Yeah.
I need to do it soon. I mean,
Put it on,
I'm
just
not
put it on
old,
that
but I
bucket
don't want to
list.
be out in freaking Yukon when I'm in my 60s either. So, but so I'd like to do it in the next, 5 to 10 years for sure.
Nice. Yeah, you will be yeah, you won't go wrong by doing it. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
No. Some of
So.
I spend a lot of my time hunting, hunting sheep and mountain hunting, right? But I love moose hunting. Like you get those big bulls in the rut and you're watching 260-inch bulls fight. And there is nothing like that. Watching those moose come into the call with their eyes rolled back in their head and stiff-legged, and they, you get within 5 yards of these things, and it's just like they are massive animals, and it's so much fun. So yeah, it's a
Nice.
blast. Sheep and goats and mountain are my go-to for for adventure and for getting after it style hunts. And I get after it moose hunting too, and but at the same time, there's just something about calling. And like you guys, like we have elk here, but the opportunities to hunt elk in the Yukon are very slim. So like you guys have elk and just these. And I get it. I've killed an elk here in the Yukon, and watching those bulls just bugling and fighting, and
Oh, it's
there is
that's
something.
the
If the
bond. It's like
hair,
my favorite.
if you're a hunter and the hair doesn't stand up on the back of your neck, get the hell out of this sport. Because if you are sitting in a valley and you're hear these elk bugling and the shit is on and they're raging, man. That's like what moose hunting is up here for me. It's not, there's kind of there's a bit of a difference because obviously, like you don't have necessarily those big numbers unless you have some good spots, which I'm fortunate to have, and you really get to see that activity. So it's awesome. I just talking about it, I get excited because there is nothing like it. So short, getting to back to the point is if you can get up here and hunt these bulls in the Yukon. You will, yeah, it'll be the same experience.
So on the Yukon, I'm trying to me as an non-resident, I'd have to have a guide, wouldn't I?
You
Or can I
have to have a
hunt?
guide.
I
You
can't hunt. Can
as
I
a
hunt with a resident over there? No.
no, not as a non-Canadian. If you were, yeah, there is this special permit. They only give out 100 of them a year. It's really difficult to get, and there's a lottery. So, whereas even BC residents can't just come up and hunt.
Got it.
They have to be special guided, and there's only 100 tags that they give out in the whole territory. So, yeah, you would have to be guided by an outfit.
Yeah. Then
Yeah.
that's the limiting factor for me. It's just,
Yeah,
I make a
it's
decent
not
living, but
cheap.
it's hard for me to go spend drop 15 grand on a hunt. I just I
Yeah,
can't do it.
and
I can't justify it with the wife. Hey babe, I'm
yeah,
gonna go drop
no.
15. Yeah, then don't go hunting for the rest of the year. That'll be the only hunt I get to do, maybe,
Yeah, I get it. And that's where the way if that's your bucket list hunt. Then you plan for it 10 years and you put $1,000 away, or well, more than that.
If I'm
But
another 10
you
years
know
from
what
now,
I
it's probably gonna
mean.
be 25 grand to go hunt.
Well, no, it's 25 now.
Oh, is it really? Is it 25 for? Jesus
It's
Christ.
22 to 25.
Wow, this is the
Yeah.
last I looked at it was like 15. Okay, Jesus.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's real tough.
That's why I live here.
Yeah. That's
That's
what I might have to
why
do.
I
It's
moved.
probably cheaper for me to move the family up there for a year or two and just get residency and then do it. Go out there for 2 years and just kill everything that I want to get and then move back.
There you go. There you
Oh my
go.
God.
No, that we've yeah, that's literally the reason. Well, I mean, I moved as a kid, but just post university, but as soon as I got here, it was like my first job was with an outfitter, and I started out packing and then guiding the last half of the season, and I knew that this is it. Like
Yeah.
this is where I have to be. And you couldn't get any further away in our country from my home where I
Yeah.
grew up than where I live right now.
Oh,
And it's
wow.
all because of hunting.
Crazy. Crazy. Are you, so you from the East Coast then?
Well, no, I grew up in Ontario.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's 6,000 kilometer drive to get to the Yukon.
Wow. Wow.
So
So, I have you on to talk about, or to share a couple of stories with us. If you have a story that kind of changed the way you hunt today, or something that you learned, something that kind of maybe hunting a species that, I don't know, you realize that this is the way I need to start hunting them from here on out. Like you figured something out, or, just you had a aha moment of some sort.
Well, I guess really that aha moment where it was, almost this is kind of goes back to, my very first season in the Yukon. And coming from Ontario, growing up in farm country and, where we're out, whitetail was in turkeys and that kind of thing was what I was hunting. And then I decided to pack up the car and head out west, and actually told my family that I was heading to Alberta because that wasn't so far. And but with the whole time knowing that we were going to the Yukon, and this is me when I say we, my wife now, my girlfriend at the time, we didn't tell our families that we were going to the Yukon because they would have said,
The hell
"What are you
you're
doing?"
thinking.
Yeah, we got here, and really one of my first jobs was with an outfit. And once I got into the mountains, because growing up in Ontario, it's all flat, and once I got into the mountains, I knew that this was going to be home. This is where I needed to be. And just learning how to hunt in the mountains and learning how to sheep hunt, and learning from some of, the people that I did. I, was very fortunate to hunt with some icons like Alex Van Bibber, who has now passed away. But, if you ever hear of, Yukon hunting stories, Alex Van Bibber is just a legend. So Al Clausen, who still guides, but, just an amazing guy that these people have, it gave me knowledge in my very first year, which just launched me to a place where I knew that I could never leave here, because this is where I needed to be to hunt. And there's good reason why it's this place is on people's bucket list, is because it's just out there. There's you get out there, and especially the way I hunt, like there is no one coming. It's up to you. Like no one's coming. You get it done however you can and get out of the bush. And that's kind of how we hunt. And that's kind of how it is up here in a lot of ways. But so I don't know if that really answers your question. I guess one of the things that I've learned over the years about hunting and hunting up here and through racing is the mindset that it takes to just overcome those obstacles that we all have every time, whether we're out hunting or whether it's getting your ass out of bed in the morning. It's just controlling the mind. And I don't I actually have a I have a saying, like it's really mind domination. Dominating your mind about doing the little things that suck.
Right.
And I've put myself in situations my whole life that, and people would kind of say, like, why the Christ would you do that, man? Like, who wants to run, through the outback of Australia for 6 days, Like, why would you do that? Or, you know, in North America or Mexico or wherever, China, Mongolia, why would you do it? And I think it's just to really see what the hell I'm made of.
Right.
Constantly challenging myself to see what I'm made of and to figure out, you know, what it is that makes you tick and why do you do it? Well, some people think that it's just stupid, but I think that it gives me the edge that I need when it comes to mountain hunting and getting after. When I see a ram, like I can sit here and this may sound ridiculous, but I know that when I see a ram in the mountains, I know that that ram is coming home in my backpack. If that's the one that I choose, it's coming home in my backpack, and that period. Like, sure, there have been times when that hasn't happened.
Right.
But if I've got the time and I make the time and that's the goal, then it's already done.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of executing the plan.
Right.
And that's what I call mental, you know, mental domination. And I try to use, and I fail at that every day. Like, but the thing is, I try to incorporate that in my life every day.
You
got to
buy into it 100% all the time. You know, I think to some extent we share. I think all hunters share that same thing you were saying, that you know, you want to see how what makes you tick. You know, that's part of hunting for me. Like, I think if that wasn't part of it, I don't think a lot of us would be doing it.
Yeah.
But I also, what you're saying about the mental game, I feel like I've gotten it a lot where, oh, like, people think I'm cocky or whatever, but if you go into something believing you can't do it, or like you're already self-defeated, you know?
Yeah, don't.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it doesn't matter if the deer's buck, whatever, you know, bull is on the, you know, 1,000 feet, 10,000 feet above me, whatever. And I'm going to go for it. And I believe that I can do it, whether that's the truth or not. But, you know, I feel like you got to have that kind of mentality. Otherwise you're going to fail a lot more times. And of course you've already failed if you don't try, you know, if you don't go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's taking that first step, but you said the key word there was believe.
Yeah.
If you believe that you can do it,
right,
then you can do it.
Exactly.
But if you don't believe that you can do it, then figure out how to just to take the first step, right? Just toward getting the confidence that will get you to the point where you believe that you can do it.
Yep.
So when I say, you know, I said, then don't, if you don't believe you can do it, don't. Well, that doesn't mean don't take the first step to get toward getting to the place where you can believe that.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, totally.
So, totally. Yeah, it's a mental game, and it's a mental, the whole, I've just put myself in such, I've intentionally put myself in situations that I guess normal people would never do or can't understand why. And I have trouble sometimes explaining it, but ultimately is I just need to test myself against me.
Mm-hmm.
And I am, you know, I am my own judge, jury and executioner.
Right.
I don't need to, like, yes, I race because I'm competitive and I like to, you know, to pit myself against other strong people. I enjoy that, but there's something about the wilderness that you can never beat the wilderness.
Right.
All you can do is put all of the things in your favor and build this mental domination that when she throws the shit at you, that you're not going to fold up and pack it up and head back to the truck.
Right.
That's the thing for me. And I constantly am trying to just test myself against me and against nature. And yeah, it's fun. I'm having a blast. I can give you I give you a story that, you know, the campfire story for you about, it's not about hunting. It's so much about hunting. It's about a race that I did here in the Yukon. It's a 700 kilometer foot race in February. So if you know anything about February in the Yukon, we're kind of mid, you know, kind of minus 30 for sure type temperatures. So this race is 700K. And this is after I've had, you know, a long career in adventure racing. So I'm pretty dialed in. Like my fitness is at where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I know that I can do 700K. And I figured I could take about 100K a day off. And you have to pull all of your gear. Like, mm-hmm. You're pulling a sled with all of your gear in it. And over the course of this race, the race starts, and the first marathon, there's people there, you know, the first, you know, 42K or 26 miles, there's people. And then I never saw a single person on the trail for the next 660 kilometers, no, call it 600 kilometers, other than checkpoints. Mm-hmm. And there was 7 checkpoints. So basically it was broken up kind of 100 kilometer checkpoints. Okay. And I had it pretty dialed in that I could do the 100K without stopping or without having to get water or, you know, boil water, because I was just, it was all about the speed, right? And I had my system pretty dialed in. Right toward the end of the race, so I've got about 200K left. And prior to that last checkpoint, which is called, you know, was called Scroggy Creek, and it was down in this valley, and the temperatures were now minus 40 to minus 45, and you just can't stop.
Right.
In my mind, I felt that I could not stop because it's just, you just freeze to death.
Mm-hmm.
So I broke trail. It snowed, and I broke trail with snowshoes for 24 hours to get to this one checkpoint. And then because I'm racing and there's a guy behind me, a snowmobile comes up behind and breaks the trail for the guy coming up behind me.
Ugh.
And so this is a mental screw as much as anything, because,
yeah.
you know, we're not really, you know, I had 12 hours on him at that point, but at the same time, I know that if I had a broken trail, I would have been moving twice as fast.
Right.
So I'm going, if this guy has his shit together, he can potentially catch me.
Right.
So I can't spend 6 hours at this checkpoint. I can only spend 3, because that would give me a 3-hour buffer. And hopefully he doesn't, you know, he takes longer than that. So the snowmobile comes up, breaks trail. And I say, so are you continuing on down the trail? And he says, no, I have to go back. I don't have enough fuel. So now the trail isn't broken ahead of me either.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
And I've got 200K to go, and there's one checkpoint between here and the finish. And so now I leave that checkpoint earlier than I wanted to,
mm-hmm.
because I've got the pressure on. And so it's a great, you know, you're in the middle of, you're literally in the middle of nowhere in the Yukon on this trail, this old trapping trail, and kind of nighttime. And there's very little daylight. You know, we got maybe 8 hours of daylight at that point. And so this is all nighttime kind of navigation with a head torch, minus 45, and just you and
sounds
nothing.
Sounds like fun. Not at all.
so I wasn't having much fun at the time, like let's be honest. But so this is where it gets really hard, is I'm on the top of this mountain range, and I know it because I used to live near Dawson City, or in Dawson City, and this is 100K from there, and I knew the back, I kind of knew the area from hunting. And I'm looking into this valley where there's supposed to be this last checkpoint before the finish.
Mm-hmm.
And this checkpoint I'm, you know, it's dead calm, minus 45. Like you would in the morning is the light is just starting. You can just see the, you know, the sun starting to come up, and I'm looking for smoke. That's the only thing that's in my brain is there's got to be, you know, a wall tent because they're supposed to have a wall tent there, and this smoke would be rising straight up. You'd see it for miles away, and I see nothing.
Oh, jeez.
So, okay. So maybe I'm not looking in the right spot, whatever. I continue on. I get down to the valley where now I have my, you know, I know exactly where I am and I know exactly where this checkpoint is supposed to be, and there's nobody there. There's no checkpoint, there's no tent, there's nothing. And I've pretty much maxed out my water because, you know, at those temperatures you always save a little bit of water in order to be able to melt the snow when it's so dry in the
Right.
Yukon. So you can't just, because you just burn, if you just put snow in there, you just burn it, right? So these are things that you have to be aware of. So I had a little bit of water to be able to use to start a stove. And anyways, this checkpoint isn't there. I continue on down the trail and thinking, okay, maybe they're just another 10K up here. Maybe they just didn't quite get there. So I go 10, 20K, and now I'm maxed out. Like, I mean, I have to get water. Otherwise, I will freeze to death right on this trail, right? And so put out my sleeping bag on the trail on top of my sled, and I get in my sleeping bag because you just can't stand out in it for in the kind of gear that you're moving in, right? So I get in and I go to start the stove just outside my sleeping bag, and it's frozen, so it won't start, and I'm pretty exhausted at this point. So I think, okay, I bring my stove inside my sleeping bag and to warm it up. So then once I get it warmed up, I'll be able to, you know, to put it outside and I'll be able to start up the stove and get some water going. So I put it in the sleeping bag and I'm pretty, you know, there's been hallucinations throughout this race. There's like, I'm riding the fine line of, you know, I hate to say it like this, but the reality is I was riding the fine line of a guy could really die in
Lose
this
it.
situation. Like, and if not that, lose limbs for sure. So I get my stove in the sleeping bag and I fall asleep. What I didn't do was I didn't turn it off. So when it heated up, the stove was started to go off and fill my sleeping bag with
Carbon.
ibuprofen butane, right?
Oh my God.
And I'm looking out of a, you know, a dime size hole in your sleeping bag because you can't get it any tighter, right? So now all of a sudden I wake up and I'm just trying to tear out of this sleeping bag. And so anyways, I get out of the sleeping bag and I get the stove outside and I go to start the water or start to melt some snow for water. And literally 5 seconds later, after I start the stove, it gels up and freezes again.
Oh God.
So now I have no choice. So it's you get out of the sleeping bag and you get moving because you have no water and you're just going to sit here. Your options are you sit here and wait to be rescued, and if that happens, yeah, great. If it doesn't, well, there's only one other option, and that's called freezing to death. So,
Jeez.
I mean, you don't have options. So the option was get going. And I packed up the stuff and I just started moving again. And about 4 hours later, while I was on the trail, the guys come down the trail on snow machines, the support crew, or I don't know if it was what they would call it, whether it was a rescue mission or not, but the people that were supposed to be at that checkpoint finally got in, and you know the conversation was that they couldn't get their snow machine started for the last couple of days, and you know they couldn't get out there. So those kind of things, you know, those temperatures, that's just what happens. But
Jesus.
So really, this is to get back to what I'm trying to get at. It's when you face situations that are dire, that's how you find out who you are and if you've built this ability to dominate your mind. Because it would have been really easy just to say, you know what, I'm just going to sit here and wait, mm-hmm. and somebody's going to come along. Well, guess what? If nobody comes along, you know, then yeah. What is your option? So right. It's just being able to control your mind and be and dominate it in so many ways. And I think that's kind of the message that has really helped me kind of be successful in what I call success in the hunting world, and by just hard charging and not quitting.
Oh, geez, man, that's crazy. Incredible. What I keep playing in my head is, well, are you like allowed to like carry like an in reach or anything like that? Like a panic button?
Yep. No, okay. Absolutely. You can. So right. What I shouldn't say in this race, it was mandatory. You had to have one.
Yeah. Okay.
But the reality of that race is that it doesn't matter if you hit the panic button.
They're not going to get there fast enough.
Like, no, they're not going to get there. Like, people in that race lose limbs, like mm-hmm. almost every, like lose fingers and toes.
Yeah.
It's just part of the beast. And if you are not completely dialed in, and certainly that year, I can guarantee that if the top 10 best, you know, endurance athletes in the world were all sitting on that start line, mm-hmm. somebody would have died. Really? Because we would have all been racing flat out and have been riding the thin line, like, and without that support out there, somebody would have died.
Jesus.
And that's just, you know, we all sign up for these things, and we know that the potential or the consequences, sometimes they're really high, and you just have to know your own abilities and play within
die after
them, right?
6 kilometers.
No.
Yeah. I'm good to about zero. Anything below, count me out.
Count me out.
So if you could share with me your favorite hunting story.
My favorite hunting story happened this year, actually. Of all of the hunting that, you know, I have a lot of great stories, but probably my favorite story is hunting sheep with my dad this year, and my dad is 72.
And you shot an adult sheep, right?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. It was actually his second sheep, but this sheep was special because he really worked. He dug so deep, and he's such so motivating to, you know, to me even, because my dad didn't grow up this, you know, amazing athlete. I grew up in this middle class family that, you know, my parents did everything they could for us, and I have an amazing family. My mom and my dad are just so many, just like so many other people have these kind of stories, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up in a family where, you know, I don't have this story that, you know, that I was, had troubles or was abused or any of these kind of things. Right. I grew up in a great family, but I didn't grow up with a family. I grew up with a family that really promoted athletics and really pushed that on me, and, you know, was so supportive in everything I wanted to do. But I wouldn't say that my dad really was this, you know, high level athlete. He was mm-hmm. always physically active, but he was never this really high level athlete. And to see him at 72 this year, just doing everything that needed to get done and not complaining, not pissing and moaning about the food or the rain or the snow or the cold or just, and because he didn't grow up in that. In the, right. Like, I've been in the Yukon for 20 years. My parents have been here for, you know, kind of, they live most of their season here for the last kind of 6 years, I guess. But he didn't grow up in this mountain environment. Mm-hmm. And still, when he goes out there now, it's just like he's testing himself. Mm-hmm. And to watch my dad test himself every day and to be part of that is was very inspirational for me to see him digging really deep where, you know, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, do I push, how do I push my dad at this age to, you know, to go further? And in a lot of ways, I didn't have to push him. I gave him the options. Like there was a time where we were looking at two great rams. Mm-hmm. And I gave him the option. I wanted personally for myself, selfishly, I wanted to cover this whole mountain block to make sure that these were the two biggest, oldest rams on this block. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, sitting across a basin looking at these sheep. And I said, Dad, they're both great sheep. I know you've worked hard to get here. And either one of those rams would be, you know, a great achievement. But, and this is where, you know, his eyes kind of go, okay, what's coming now, Greg? You know, but I would really like to cover this whole mountain block to be sure that these are the rams that we want to take. And he just looked at me and he said, whatever you want to do, son, let's do it.
Nice.
And that was the time that I, you know, that I knew, wow. Like the apple doesn't fall that far from the tree. My dad never, he never really had somebody to push him. He didn't have the father that I did. He did grow up in one of those families that was dysfunctional.
Yeah.
He didn't have the father that I had, and he didn't have that person to teach him like my dad taught me. But right. What I saw there was an, you know, an older man, and I won't say old man because he would, you know, he would elbow me in the side of the head right now. But, you know, I saw an older man there just doing what he told me to do every day in athletics.
Yeah.
He said to he like I would go be playing hockey and it would be like, Greg, you are the first one on the ice and you're the last one to leave. And I don't care whether you score goals, whether you, you know, no matter what happens, but you never stop working. Every shift you go out there, you put your 45 hardest seconds that you can do. And obviously I didn't always do that, but that's something that resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And what, where it really hit home was, you know, 25 years later, when you're sitting on the side of a mountain with your dad and you're giving him the options and he's choosing not the easy option when right. he wants to take it, he wants to go over and shoot one of those rams right now, but he chooses not to take it because it's, you know, something that I was asking him for.
Right.
And, you know, long story short, we go back and we get that block covered and see lots of other sheep, but those two rams were the rams to shoot. And I don't want to wreck the story, so I'll leave it at that. And that's kind of where it where the hunt really, you know, materialized.
Yeah, if you want to see the story, you get to, that's in this season, right? Yeah, coming up.
Yeah, that's coming up in 2019.
Sweet. Well, cool. Well, where can our listeners find out more about you and check out the show?
We just wrapped up season one on the Sportsman Channel, and it's Greg McHale's Wild Yukon is the name of the show. And, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Greg McHale's Wild Yukon, you know, just We are almost non-existent on the social media platform. We're just really, we're a bunch of guys in the Yukon grinding it out every day. And yeah, it's this game is this television media. It's a different beast. I don't need to tell you.
Yeah.
You've lived it. And you know, if there's, I could probably sit and ask you questions and you could help me out tremendously, but
anytime,
what man. I do, yeah, what I do know is it's really tough to make your way in this world, but I've never been one to run from adversity and difficulty.
That's obvious.
So I know that the team that we have is, and guys, and this is going to sound cocky and I don't want it to, but I believe this is the truth, in that we have the best hunting, mountain hunting team on the planet. Like the guys, Dave and Carl, and you know, I got support crews with Ryan and like these, and our families, like everyone is driving in the same direction. And when you have a group of guys, a group of men that are driving in the same direction with the same passion, you better either be on board or get out of the way, because this is what's happening. And we are so very privileged to be able to, you know, to talk to guys like you, John, and you know, you've got years and of wealth of experience. And in the media part, we're new. But we're learning fast, and what I do know that this industry is about, it's about partners, it's about being true to who you are, and doing what you say you're going to do.
Yep. Yeah, and, I mean, honestly, that's the best piece of advice I could give anybody who's getting into it, you know, doing what you say you're going to do, because there's so many guys out there that promise you this and they give you that, you know, and it's tough, because there's a million yous out there with their hands out going to all these sponsors trying to get money, and you know, for you to stay on top is it comes down to how you conduct yourself, providing what you say you're going to do, producing good content, and making those partnerships that you know you could stick by. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know how much it costs to produce it now. You know what the airtime is. You know it's not cheap and it's not easy, and it's really easy for somebody to just to take on anybody that's willing to give you money just so you could pay the bills. But doing a show like you're doing, where like you are relying on your gear, you're relying on, you know, you can't just pick, you know,
I can't fake it.
Yeah. You can't be out there with like Alps backpacks and, you know,
I don't even know who Alps backpacks
exactly. are. That's what I'm saying. You can't be running around out there in like Walmart camouflage and whatnot. It's just not going to work. But
no, so. And that goes, I guess, you know, a lot of that, I guess it's very easy for me, to be true to, I think that who I am, because I won't just use anything because I can't,
right.
I literally cannot, like you said, I can't go out there and do what I do with some half-ass product.
Nope.
And I can tell you right now, I don't, you know, it's a tough gig, because you're competing against other people that will use anything.
Right.
And you know, sometimes that's kind of where businesses need to market, to just, you know, give stuff away, and it's hard, but good. Yeah. I'm glad it's hard.
You almost have a leg up, because doing what you do and how you do it,
you almost have to just, there's only a handful of companies that make, you know, clothing that's going to suit your needs. There's only a handful of companies that can make backpacks and camping gear and whatever, tents and whatnot, that are going to perform to the level that you need them to. So, you know, you don't have to be a snake oil salesman, basically, which is great, you know? So, a guy that's killing whitetail out of a tree stand, you know, puts a show out there, he can friggin' use whatever the hell he wants, whether he likes it or not. But, man, cool. I'm glad to see, that you guys are coming out with a second season, and, glad we got you on. I think your style of hunting and hunting, it's probably not something that's going to be very obtainable to most of my listeners, but it's inspirational that even within the stuff that we do, you know, even if it's elk hunt here and not going doll sheep hunting, to apply the mindset that you have.
Yeah. Thanks, John. That's as much as I think that why I'm doing this is I've had to, you know, really sit down and think, who is Greg McHale and why am I doing this? And really, one of the things that I have no problem saying that is a little bit controversial, but I'm going to explain why, is I am a trophy hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm a trophy hunter at heart. And I believe, and I know that just by coming out and saying that, some people are going to go, oh, okay. But I want you just to bear with me for a second. I grew up in rural Ontario, hunting whitetail out of a tree stand. I know what that world is all about. And when I say I'm a trophy hunter, putting that venison in my freezer, whether it was the first button buck that I ever killed with my bow, putting that venison in my freezer, that was my trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Trophy hunting, we need to change the perception of what trophy hunting is.
Right.
Because if you have ever put meat in your freezer to feed your family the best organic meat on the planet, that is your trophy.
Right.
Now, whether you are, you know, some philanthropist or you have millions of dollars and you go out and you want to do an African hunt, you know, the hunt is the trophy. It's not the horns. It's the experience.
Yeah.
It's going out and doing it, whether it's spending it with me, spending it with my dad, and in the future with my son. That's the trophy.
Right.
So to have this conception of this natural conception of trophy hunter, being this rich guy that just goes and kills stuff and then leaves it behind, like, that doesn't happen. That's called illegal. Okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
so anybody that does that is just, you know, it's just illegal. So I want to try to change the conception of what a trophy hunter is, because we as hunters, we need to come together.
Oh yeah.
We need to come together en masse to educate and to promote this sport or lifestyle, whatever you want to choose to call it, that we do, because there are so many huge benefits to family and, you know, the meat that you put on the table, the camaraderie with your friends, the people that, you know, that you get out there and you meet. These are the trophies.
Absolutely.
And when we try to narrow it down to a head on a wall,
yeah,
that's, in my
there's
opinion,
so much more
wrong.
There's so much more, everything that went into it, like the planning, even just a whitetail, whatever, you know.
Yes.
There's so much that goes into it, so much planning and so much thinking about it and whatever. I started years ago, I started calling myself an experience hunter. I took the trophy out of it. Nice. I'm out there just to, you know, to hunt the experience. You know, whether I come home with something or not, or if there's meat at the end of it, or horns, you know, they included with it, whatever. It was just, it's about the experience. And I just, once I started believing into that and feeling that way, like everything changed for me. Like my hunting experiences all the way around were better.
Yeah, so. I love the analogy, the experience hunter. What I think that, and you and I are talking about the exact same thing. What I think that the trophy hunter for me is it's just trying to have us as hunters not shy away from that word, because that word gives fuel to those people out there that don't want us doing what we're doing.
Right.
And if we use that word, that the only word that they can hold on to in a lot of ways that they're using, if we start using that word to express how our love and our passion and all these other things that are involved in what we do, then they don't have that anymore.
Right.
And that's what it is. You can't take away the trophy from us when the trophy is the experience.
Right. Right. That's huge. Yeah. I've been working on that myself, Hunter Up Initiative. I'll actually send you a link to it. A lot of it talks about that. It talks about the internal battles we have as hunters, talking about the battles we have with, you know, and just trying to change and the perception of what a trophy hunter is, and try to educate the public on, you know, the pros of hunting and what it means to the world, what it makes it, you know, especially in the United States. I know our system of conservation, it's not shared by Canada, but we wouldn't have the wild place that we have now if it wasn't for hunting and the way it is, you know. It's on us. It's on us to put out there a certain persona, to educate people, to make them understand that it's not just horns, it's not just meat, it's all this stuff, you know, all this encompassing the experience of it all that makes hunting as special what it is to us and why we have passion for it. So
exactly. Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. I look forward to seeing this, your next season coming out, and I hope it warms up there a little bit soon for you.
I'm not anticipating it warming up anytime soon.
I'll tell you what. Hey, I don't know if you've ever hunted javelina before. It's not a sheep, but if you want, there's some leftover tags right now. Arizona's draw pass, but there's some leftover permits for muzzleloader javelina in the middle of February. You should pick up a tag and come down to Arizona, get out of the damn freezing cold. I mean, it'll still be somewhat cold over here, you know, it'll be in the 40s and 50s, but
nice.
It'd be a fun mountain hunt for you, you know.
Okay, so you're going to be my guide?
I'll help you out, yeah. I'll help you out. I'm actually taking one of your brethren out with me on that hunt. I don't know if you know who James Fitzgerald is. He was a guy that won he's the first guy to ever win the first CrossFit Games.
Oh yeah.
He owns OPEX. Nice. And I'm taking him out February 8th, 9th, and 10th with our daughters on a muzzleloader javelina hunt, and he's from Labrador. Originally.
Oh, okay. So. Huh. Nice. Yeah. Well, upcoming here is, for me, is just flat out with the show season. So I head to SCI here tomorrow. So that that kind of starts for me. And
I don't miss that.
And then,
first year I'm not going to SHOT Show or any of those.
Is this the very first year you're not going?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I'm gonna go to hunting expo in Utah, and that's it.
It's interesting for me because, you know, just being so far removed up here, right? Like to get down to a Vegas or, you know, Reno or just the, you know, and see like a SHOT Show or SCI or Sheep Show. It's
Yeah, just people
really
everywhere.
it's interesting. It's interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. Well,
But
cool, man.
yeah,
Well,
thanks,
hopefully
John.
one of these days we'll hook up and I don't foresee me doing any hunts up there because I can't afford it right now, but one of these days I'd like to.
Yeah, it's certainly a barrier to entry in a lot of ways, isn't it? That's like I said, that's why I had to move here.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate your time, and yeah, all the best to you. And if you ever do have an inkling to get up here, it can hit your bucket list someday. Just give me a shout, and I'll help you make it happen.
Sweet. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks,
Hi,
John. I
man.
appreciate your time.
Take it
All right,
easy.
cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcasts that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.